1-41-951-1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on a big weekend across Scottish football. Rangers win but at a cost. Lauren Shanklin looks set to miss 3 months with a hamstring injury. There was an incident-packed night in Paisley which sees Celtic go 5 wins from 5 and stay top. Hearts finished last season in second. That's where they find themselves right now after another big win. St Johnstone got a good victory and the fallout continues from the proposals to introduce more young players to Scottish football. I'm Gordon Duncan and joining me this evening you have Andy Halliday and David Freel of the Scottish Sun.
Yeah, as you say, Gordon Craig Mulholland, so much focus on the future after the summit, I'm allowed to call it that, on Friday, but it's all about the present. A good weekend of football, some big wins, and we also had our first managerial casualty of the season.
Didn't we just?
Well, we have some big news and big talking points that we should, for sure have to get into, but that's one in particular I'm really keen to talk about. And on top of, obviously, the summit that you mentioned with Craig Mulholland, I was lucky enough to see the presentation. Sort of negative I took away from it was the fact that the public can't see the presentation. It's one of the ones you would love everyone to see and see the information that's presented in front of you. But like I said, plenty of talking points.
Plenty. 01419511025. I think those two just asked for Livy fans on the phones, which I maybe didn't expect, but right enough. We've got our first managerial casualty of the season and loads to get through over the weekend. So come on, let's hear from you. 01419511025. Rangers fans, news just coming out in various places that Lauren Shanklin looks set to miss 3 months with that hamstring injury. So give us your reaction to that. Straight off the bat, what do you make of it? How big a blow? All the obvious questions you would expect on the back of news like that. Now, Kevin Kelsey's just been signed for £9 million. Ryan Nadiri came on and scored at the weekend. But he's the club captain. He just started scoring, and you'd rather have 3 striking options to choose from than 2. So give us your reaction there, please, on 01419511025. And the game itself, of course, was that Rangers' best then performance of the season, or certainly the most satisfying for you Rangers fans? What did you like about it? Do you think things are starting to turn? Paisley was the place to be. The top two, who would have thought it, looking at some of these pundit predictions at the start of the season? But St Mirren had been going great, had their moments, but Celtic win to make it 5 from 5. That was an incident-packed game. Loads of talking points, loads of moments in there that you might want to go over, and loads of other big results as well. Hearts going about their business quietly, if such a thing exists, after that summer of losing everyone, then a ropey start in Europe. They even lost their first league game, but they didn't deserve to, and they've won every one since, and all of a sudden they're up to second. So what do you make of them? And at the other side of things, Kilmarnock do get a point on the board, but still bottom. Aberdeen's woes continue. Booed off at half time and full time, that's never a good sign. So let's go over it all from the weekend on 01419511025. And in Andy Halliday, I think you have the most interested in the summit pundit anywhere in Scotland. This guy has been doing his own research, he tells me, over the weekend. He's seen Craig Mulholland's presentation with his own eyes. He's all across it. So if you want to get your support for it, your concerns for it, whatever, we're here for you on the same number. Set the scene, you two, then. Result of the weekend, please.
Oh well, I'll go for St Johnstone. I've been really, really impressed with St Johnstone so far. Albeit it's only been 5 games into the domestic season, but I think their performance levels have been really impressive. They lost by 1 goal at Tynecastle. They obviously got a big home win against Kilmarnock, and they followed that up with what I thought was a really convincing win against under pressure David Gray's Hibs at this moment in time. I think they've got a lot of good individuals, but it's more the team performance that I thought was really impressive. So they're my result of the weekend.
I'm going to go to Friday night. There were some good results in Premiership, but I think Big Marv has done an unbelievable job so far at Stenhouse Muir. They're top of the league, 5 games played, 4 wins, 1 draw, 0 losses, and what a win against his former club Livy.
Do you think you'd have enjoyed that one?
I think so.
Ever so slightly.
That's a double against Livy, isn't it?
They played them in the cup. Was it the cup already?
I saw a picture of him in the sidelines. Let's just say he looked very happy.
I love nothing. I hate nothing more, I should say, than giving him credit. But seriously, beating Livy, David Martindale's back in charge. Yeah. Livy didn't give him the job. Like, oh, it's all there, isn't it?
It is all there. But in Look, unfortunately, it meant that Glenn Whelan lost his job. Yeah. Gordon, as we said, the first managerial casualty of the year. I'm sure we'll all get into that a bit more. But a great result
September,
for Stenny.
September, bingo card.
Your result of the weekend you did. What about your goal of the weekend, David Friel?
I am going to go for... I'm going to dip into the Championship again. I'm going to go for Michael Ruth of Queen's Park.
That's a great goal.
Against Greenock Morton. It was more like Michael Moles. Gordon, a couple of wee shimmies and then whipped it into the top corner. Brilliant goal. That's my goal of the weekend.
I'm going to go even further down the pyramid. You know, Dumbarton were sitting joint bottom of the league, coming up against High Flying Elgin, who were currently top of the league. Now, they won the game 2-1. I encourage anyone to go and watch the winning goal by Ali Omar. It is a free kick 10 yards inside his own half. The audacious nature to even attempt to try and score, and make no doubt about it, there was no fluke. It was a direct free kick where he tried to score. And it actually made my quad sore looking how hard he had to hit the ball that far. But absolutely brilliant. What an effort it was.
He gave the keeper no chance as well.
Well, Hugh Keevans was in net, so no chance.
And he's not happy with the goalkeeping. What about your howler of the weekend? Who are we going for?
Right, I'll go. See, sometimes a manager says something that punters just jump on, Gordon. I like Stephen Robinson. I've dealt with him a lot over the years, but when he started talking about Aberdeen being a bit devoid of energy because they had a bit of travel during the week down to Glasgow for a game against Celtic, I think you can see by the reaction of the Aberdeen fans, they aren't having that as an excuse, and it's maybe something he shouldn't have said.
To follow on, this is 7 days after I said that Stephen Robinson's the king of excuses. He's then followed up with travel as an excuse the following week when Kilmarnock had to travel up to Pittodrie. Anyway, my howler is Alex Poulsen. I've been a huge fan of him since he's came in the door at Motherwell. I think he's an outstanding shot stopper. I think he's excellent with his distribution, with his feet. But decision-making, execution, you can either play a 5 yard pass to Gerbert right to your right hand side, and it has to, what can only be described as a Ronaldo chop past Ryan Nadiri, and presents him an open goal. So it was a poor mistake by the goalkeeper.
I've done your howler, both of you. What about your man of the weekend?
Man of the weekend, David? Apologies in advance to Hugh Keevans, but I'm going to go for Yang. He's away in Asian Games duty with South Korea, but he's had a brilliant start to the season. He is a very important player for Celtic now, and I thought he was excellent against St Mirren, culminating in his winning goal. Stayed calm, brilliant finish, and Celtic are only missing him for the next 4 games.
I've seen people on social media talking about the Yang gang. I wonder if Hugh Keevans is wanting to sign up yet. Do you think he'll be converted?
I think he's going to be converted now. I mean, how long can this continue for?
Have you heard Hugh Keevans ever back down on one of his opinions before? I'm not so sure.
He'll be listening, Gordon. I'm just waiting for the text.
So all of a sudden he's a big miss for Celtic over these next four games. What are you going for? Top man of the weekend?
I don't think I've ever went for a chief football officer before.
Oh, you're on board with this.
I'm going to go for Craig Mulholland. I was well in favour with a proposal when I seen just the initial rule changes for the cup competitions, but when I was put in front to him to actually look at the presentation, I always knew it was dire straits, but when you actually see the data that's presented in front of you, it's even worse than you potentially feared. So like I said, it's just unfortunate that not loads more people can see it, but I can assure you what we've seen was eye-opening.
If you've got any thoughts on the plans to introduce young players into the Scottish first teams again, that's just a number of the topics you can wade in on tonight. 01419511025. Incident pack night in Paisley. We've got Lauren Shankland's injury. It looks like 3 months out. Reports coming out this evening. How big a blow is that, Rangers fans? Do you think you can cope without them? What does the striking department look like now? All of the above and more. Get your thoughts into us immediately. That's sort of breaking news this afternoon. If you like, we can look back on Paisley, big win for Hearts. Aberdeen fans, maybe you want to wade in here. These two are not too impressed with the manager and so on over the weekend. I know the team was booed off at half time, booed off at full time. That's never good. So pick up that phone, please. 01419511025. Right, because it's fresher, it's just happening, the reports are starting to come out. Lauren Shankland, 3 months on the sidelines. Your verdict?
Extremely disappointing, obviously, for Lorne Shankland first and foremost, and extremely disappointing for Rangers. He was just starting to find his feet and get into his groove. He's obviously club captain, so he's a big presence already in the dressing room at that as well, and there's now even more pressure on Kevin Kelsey's shoulders. For me, I think there was already going to be pressure given the fee that he was acquired for, but he's now probably going to get thrust into action a lot quicker than was expected. So, but first and foremost, it's obviously a huge disappointment for Lorne Shankland, and wish him well.
Yeah, you can always tell with the way a player reacts, Gordon, and you could just see a look in Lorne Shankland's face the other day where he knew it was a bad one. You know, I remember they did it for Hearts last year. I think it was against Falkirk in the Scottish Cup where he pulled up. It was exactly the same. It's going to be a huge loss for Rangers. Now, Rangers do have some bodies there. They've got Kelsey, who's just come in for big money. They've got Ryan Nadiri, who obviously scored and did well on Saturday. You've even got Bojan Miovski, behind that as well. But I think we saw at Falkirk last midweek the value and the importance of Lauren Shankland. You know, two brilliant finishes, especially the second one. I just thought it was a brilliant goal, a brilliant striker's goal. That's what Rangers are going to really miss for 3 months.
Gary, how big a blow? Gary's on the line as a Rangers fan. How big a blow is that news, Gary? 3 months, it looks like.
Evening, gents. How are you? Okay.
Good, thanks.
How's it going, Gary?
Hi, Gary.
Yeah, it's a massive blow. I know he did it at Hearts last year and stuff. He came back an actual better player in my eyes, but he did look a wee bit overweight and stuff. I'm not too sure because they were saying, you know, playing in the AstroTurf before with the Falkirk game, and then you know these things happen. He's coming back. It's a massive blow. I like the look of this. This new big striker we've got, but I was going to say as well, I'm glad that we never got rid of Miovski, knowing that we've only got two strikers left for 3 months. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Andy, Kevin Kelsey has been signed for $9 million. He was only signed because Yusuf Tchermiti's out for a length of time with that ACL injury. Does this just numerically open a door that looked closed for Bojan Miovski? Then he didn't manage to go anywhere. Did I see him on social media at the weekend announcing that he's not got an agent anymore?
Yeah.
I don't know what sort of fallout has happened there, but where does this leave Rangers?
I think it leaves them out without what is probably their number one strike at this moment in time. I think Kevin Kelsey was going to come in to compete for that spot, and the reason I said that, I feel as if it's put a little bit more pressure on the new signings. I think it was only natural that Lauren Shankland would continue to lead the line, and he'd always get embedded in slowly, which I think Dennett McInnes through recent years has done quite a lot with new signings. But that being said, with the injury news today that he's going to be out for 3 months, I think he'll be thrust into action a lot sooner. It wouldn't actually surprise me, it wouldn't potentially be against it either, if he starts on Wednesday against St Mirren, because if you have one eye on him starting next weekend in the League Cup quarter final against Celtic, I can only imagine that you would want him to get a bit more minutes under his belt in Scottish football. So, but that being said, I do agree with Gary. I thought it was a decent cameo for the 30 minutes he was on the pitch. I thought his link-up play looked tidy. I thought he looked that willing runner, full of energy. That being said, when you paid £9 million, you're expected to score goals, and he'd be really disappointed with the huge opportunity he missed.
The thing is as well, I mean, Lauren Shankland, forget the goals for a second, but he's also Dennett McKenzie's leader. You know, he named him club captain. I think when he first came in to the job, Dennett McInnes had this vision of Lauren Shankland and Yusuf Tchermiti striking up a partnership, Gordon, and you know, he has to bemoan his luck that he's lost two of them to long term injuries by the looks of it. You know, if Lauren Shankland is out, as we think, for 3 months, that's a savage blow for Rangers. The good thing is they do have numbers there, but it puts a lot of pressure on Kelsey, and I think you're now looking at guys like Nadiri and Miovski to really share the load and try and spread out the goals, I suppose, because Rangers don't have European football. Okay, that means they don't have as many games, but there's still some big games coming up.
I did see that comment from Derek McInnes. In fairness, you can probably take it out of context. I don't think it's about blaming the Falkirk pitch in isolation, Andy, but talking about when you go from Astro onto grass and change surface, sometimes that can have an impact. Is that something
I think it's really fair. Obviously, the last 3-4 years of my career, I was struggling with an Achilles injury, and that's where I felt it would really get flared up when it comes to the winter months, and you know, grass pitches that you train on aren't suitable. So you go through Astro one day to the grass, the next day the grass one day could be really soft, the next day it could be really, really firm. So yeah, I think it's a fair assessment. Like you says, I don't think he was indirectly blaming the Falkirk pitch. It was just in transition into the surface, he's probably played a part in the injury.
So overall, Gary, is this really damaging, or do you think the rest can carry the can without Lauren Shankland?
I think they can. I think the double header with Celtic is a big massive one. My main point, Gordon, if it's okay, I was just going to say, probably you guys obviously know, there was a guy who had a heart attack in the stand, and it was just the stewards and stuff, their reaction to it was quite shocking, to be honest with you.
Can I be honest about that, Gary? I saw this, and see, just because of the nature of just sort of how sensitive that is and people's health and all that, I wouldn't really want us to speculate on what did or didn't go on. More than happy, you know, in the future to revisit, if obviously I'm sure everybody involved in Rangers would investigate that and see how it played out. But just first and foremost, wish everybody well, hope everybody's safe on that front. You too happy with that? You want to
weigh in and
add anything different? See, something that Andy said, David, is that part of this as well? Like, I can almost, you know, imagine other Scottish clubs who need to deal with big injuries and say, well, you know, Rangers were able to sign a £9 million striker, I'm sure they'll be fine. But maybe that's not the point, because Derek McInnes's captain, as you mentioned, but also just a timing thing. All of a sudden Kevin Kelsey's like, need, we always talk about players needing to hit the ground running, but that's just exaggerated, hasn't it?
Yeah, of course it is, because I think Derek McInnes would have wanted a period of adaptation for Kevin Kelsey. You know, he's coming from a different league. He is going to be, you know, probably just try to bleed him into the team. And I'm not saying he wouldn't have played a big part against, especially in the two Celtic games anyway, but I think he would want to kind of drip feed him into the team, but that's not going to happen now. I think Derek McInnes had a little joke about the fact that he chose to put Nadiri on. I'm not sure all the Rangers fans were overly happy with that decision when he went on as the early sub, but obviously that was vindicated. But yeah, Kevin Kelsey's just going to have to hit the ground running. He's going to have to come in, and there's going to be pressure on his shoulders straight away.
Yeah, I think Ryan Nadiri, in isolation, actually, thinks he probably had his best fortnight as a Rangers player, but he was brought to the club for £5 million. He's been there since January. So I think he's still got a fair bit to do to try and win over a large majority of the support. And I think if Rangers are speculating of what their best 11 is going to be ahead of an Old Firm double header, I think it's probably already leaning towards the guy they've not seen too much of, other than the 30 minutes over Ryan Nadiri. I think so, yeah.
So like then he comes straight in and starts. You think he has to come straight in and start the game on Wednesday with a view to the weekend?
I think he has to play on Wednesday to make your mind up about the weekend, if that makes sense. I think if you've got one eye on him playing next weekend, I think he has to start on Wednesday first. So like you say, he's a bit more accumulated to the league. And for me, I think Ryan Nadiri's still got a whole lot of work to do. He's not shown that he can get the goals required to lead the line for me throughout a season for Rangers. So like you say, it's a 3 month period that Lon Shanklin's out for. So I think Kevin Kelsey's got a real opportunity to stake an early claim.
Generally speaking, it's your two former clubs. What did you make of the game? I mean, clearly Rangers win, get a clean sheet, it's another win. There was quite a lot of praise on the Rangers' performance. Did it feel like a, I don't know, how can it be a turning point when they've already won a couple? But you know what I mean? Did it feel like a significant victory? Or
yeah, I think the performance as a whole, yes. I thought the Falkirk game was finally in the balance for the majority. I thought in the first half, I thought Motherwell had loads of control of the game, and I thought Rangers looked really, really dangerous on the counter-attack. I was actually really surprised at Rangers' approach to the first half, almost sitting off the game, inviting Motherwell into areas. But it worked well at times when they did exploit them on the counter-attack. I thought they looked really threatening. But it wasn't until they were a lot more aggressive at the top end of the pitch in the second half where I thought you'd seen a lot better signs of the Rangers' side. They continuously stole the ball off of Motherwell in really dangerous areas. And you've got to say the main surprise was how the game ended up. I think it was much more than a 1-0 game based off the chance that Rangers created in the second half. But in terms of the performance as a whole, I think it's the most complete performance Rangers have had.
I'm just looking at the midfield as being a bit more, we spoke last week about the structure of it, but I don't know about you, Andy, but I think Dan Neil's starting to settle in there. He's obviously got Nico Raskin beside him as well, but I think having the three in front, you know, it's been Minsoo Kim, Gassama, Finlay Curtis doing well. And I wonder as well, that might offset the loss of Lon Shanklin to a point, because Derek McInnes came back to play with one striker with three behind him. Is he going to stick with that, do you think, for the next couple of games?
Yeah, I think he has to, personally. I'd mentioned a few times when Rangers started the season in that traditional 4-4-2, I thought they looked really rigid within it. And I think just the introduction of Minsoo Kim, I think they look a lot more dynamic at the top end of the pitch. And I think that three, as you mentioned, Gassama, Minsoo Kim and Finlay Curtis, are causing loads of issues just through their movement when they're on the ball, and I think they're doing a power of work off the ball as well, it's got to be said. So I think Jeddy Gassama is in a really good period at this moment in time, and just to follow up on that, I think the two centre-halves, I think you're finally starting to see a settled partnership at the back. For me, I thought both Fernandez and McCann had a really good game. I actually thought they played really well on Wednesday, if it wasn't for that one error that Fernandez makes to nearly gift a goal to Falkirk. So I think you're starting to see a bit of a partnership develop there.
What do you want to discuss next? 0141 951 1025. You tell us, we'll speak to you after these.
Talking football 6 until 8. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and David Freelar here. Feel free to pick up the phone to them, 0141 951 1025. Loads to get through as we look back on the weekend. We've got a couple of fixtures on Wednesday as well, so we're just around the corner from getting back to it. Paul is a Celtic fan on the line. How are you, Paul?
Hi, Gordon.
What are you thinking tonight, Paul?
Hi, Andy. Just a couple of points. Just first of all, I think Andy Halley's becoming the Gary Neville of Scottish football.
That's not very good.
What a statement that is.
Well, seriously, the guys, I mean, as Graham Souness says, a better pundit than I first thought. But,
I thought you meant because he makes weird high-pitched noises when teams score the goals, no?
No, that's Stephen Gerrard. That's I thought the other subject. And I've got a nickname for your other pundit who knocked back my clothing range sponsorship, the Oakleview Oracle.
That's not bad, Marvin. Yeah, okay. He's been called a lot worse than that, and that's by me usually. Okay, fair dues. Right, what are you thinking about the weekend?
So my point, and it's not normally my bag because you guys, I think, talk about it too much sometimes, but I can't believe the panel did not mention the guy Lee, the referee, young referee coming through, albeit on Saturday night, as one of the howlers of the week. Just thought he was maybe a victim of the equipment not working or whatever, but apparently the rule is, if it's not clear and obvious error, I don't know if the VAR, the guy in charge of VAR, has thrown him under a bus, but it just seemed to be a bit of a shambles, to be honest.
And what in particular, Saul? Talk to me a bit more. You mean the last goal or the...
Well, the line's not been drawn. And again, yeah, I know that's your other employer, so you're maybe conflicted with Sky, but...
They don't
I can
draw
answer
the
if you want, Paul.
It doesn't bother me. They don't.
Gary Neville can answer if you want.
Sky don't draw the lines.
Do they draw the lines? I saw that on. So it's not, if it's not them are drawing the lines, then it's the equipment that's faulty. They were saying no Poundland offering and all that kind of stuff. But the lines aren't clearly drawn. The one for Duran, if they put it forward a frame, it actually comes off. I think it's Gogic, but it comes off as a man player. Therefore, it's it's an opposing player.
The touch doesn't negate that offside. That's not enough to change it.
So just blurring the lines really for both decisions.
Again, I don't think you can. I don't know. I mean, I've been at Clydesdale House and stuff. I know people like maybe not everyone. You don't. There's no setting where you choose to blur the lines. But I think the last one's the most interesting, right? Because Paul, the ref goes to the monitor. We don't always see that. One of you two want to take it on?
Yeah, well, Paul, you mentioned clear and obvious error. Clear and obvious errors for decisions, offsides are factual overturns. They couldn't draw the line because on the freeze frame, you can't actually individually pick one of the foots because they're conjoined. So then what happens is it's not about clear and obvious error. The referee's then sent to the monitor to give essentially a second opinion through his eyes, just give a visual decision. And in all fairness, I think most would probably say it did look offside. Now, I'm with you on the first one in the sense that when I seen the first angle, I think it's onside. I think his goal's going to stand. But then when you see the freeze frame, when it does leave, I think is it Duran?
Yang
that puts in the cross, then he is offside. So ultimately, the both decisions were correct.
I think Andy, it's quite nice that Andy wants to take on this role. I'll just sit back. I'm done with this stuff. I think there's been a wee bit of misunderstanding about in terms of when the ref can or can't go to the monitoring. That is for sure, because we've been sort of had it drummed into us forever, clear and obvious error and that stuff. This is a bit different. Just as Andy says, the lines could not be drawn. And if anyone's hasn't seen it before, it actually did happen at the end of last season. I remember it was on the VAR review. It was Kilmarnock Dundee. The lines couldn't be drawn because of the glare coming off the pitch, that old plastic pitch that they had. And believe it or not, it was a sunny day. And the referee was asked to go over, David. Now, I think at the most basic level, the logic is if the lines can't be drawn, you sort of might as well have another look. Again, you don't need to agree with that, but I think that's kind of what leads to what happened there at the weekend.
Yeah, and the ref is allowed to go over and just to double check that he agrees that in this case Shamueka was offside, which I think everybody probably does. Now, it does lead to a lot of confusion, I get it. I was there covering the game for the paper, Gordon, and I must admit in the stadium it was confusing as well. And I'm also watching the game on an iPad and everything, and you could imagine what was going on. You could see Martin O'Neill down there. You could even see Craig McLeish asking questions about what was going on. But I think ultimately, in terms of Mieka one, he clearly was offside. I think what also doesn't help with the first one was obviously the game was, they're showing replays, and the replays don't necessarily, as Paul came on and said, Sky draw the lines, Sky don't draw the lines. That's in the VAR, Clydesdale House. So It was a confusing night to a point. So when you see, there are explanations.
So when you see that first replay on the Duran goal, and you see that first replay, that's not necessarily what the VAR are looking at that time.
Which again, it's a televised. Yeah, it's a televised game. And the TV company are providing the function, or the broadcast company are providing the function, but then VAR then does the kick point, which they believe to be the kick point, and then from that moment they then check the cameras. So yeah, it was confusing, but you know, I think that the right decisions were reached.
Because I think what was quite interesting about the second one, so if you'll indulge me, let me use the Kilmarnock-Dundee example, because we all know that see, as soon as you mention Celtic or Rangers in an incident, everybody's pre-loaded biases one way or the other are kind of entered into the equation. So I remember on that Killie-Dundee one, asking that question and saying, but why, if you can't draw the lines, would the referee go to the monitor? Why would you not just stick with the on-field decision? Because I think that's what most people would kind of like instinctively expect. And I think the response I got, something along the lines of, can you imagine, right, the other night then, let's take Mooker. Let's imagine you see the TV replay and he's 3 yards offside, right? Let's say it's completely clear. Now, it wasn't the other night. They were quite close to each other. But let's say everybody watches that back and you go, oh, he's miles off. But the ref's then not allowed to correct it because they didn't draw the lines. And then the goal stands. And then these phone lines would really, really be heating up with with St Mirren fans and everybody else.
Yeah, when there's footage there in front of you, you can tell.
Yeah,
even though there's no lines. No, I get it. I was also at one a couple of years ago, and it was Dundee St Johnstone, where the lines couldn't be drawn, but it was also impossible really to see. And
is that the one where it felt like there was 45 people in the penalty box?
Yeah, and Nicky Clark eventually scores, and Kevin Clancy went over, looked, and he couldn't tell either. So in that situation, they did stick with the on-field decision, and he gathered the captains and managers and said, "This is the reason." But Saturday night was a bit different.
It was a bit confusing, Paul. I don't know if that satisfies you in any way, if Gary Neville's won you over.
The thing, the second one as well, is that there was no flag for the assistant ref, you know, and I don't know where the fourth official plays a role in any of this, if he's got a say, but you know, but we he can see from there. But but anyway, my last point is I'm thinking of my feet here. Is I've always been the feeling squarely in the Yang gang, so I think he's becoming. I don't know if following him. Or, I mean, Martin Neil's got good previous experience for bringing on wingers, and he seems to be flourishing under Martin O'Neill. I think his upper body as well. I think his actual physicality has improved, but I thought he was outstanding on Saturday.
Andy, how much of a miss is Yang going to be for Celtic over these next four games? Not a question I would have asked with a great deal of sincerity at various points over his Celtic career, but do we need to acknowledge that question has changed, has become much more relevant now?
Absolutely. Listen, I think he's going to be a miss. How big a miss depends on whose availability for me. I don't know if you can, Fabrizio Friel on the left hand side can divulge whether who will be back over at any stage over the next four, but it almost feels as if they still have a pretty strong front three. If Duran then goes over to the wing, Hassan's on the other wing, and who's back through the middle. But I've not seen enough of Tanetke to be impressed in a Celtic jersey. So if you're losing Yang and Tanetke, he's going to be the guy that's playing in that wide left position over the next four games, I think that's a downgrade. So I certainly think he's missed. I bet you when Hugh Keevan started the anti-Yang fan club, we wouldn't be saying that.
The anti-Yang gang.
Yeah. The anti-Yang gang. I mean, just to touch on what Andy said, I think Tanetke, since he came in, you know, he's a £5 million winger. I don't think he's really shown consistently well enough that he's at the level, to be honest with you, Gordon. He doesn't work as hard as Yang. He doesn't have the same end product. He needs to do more. He needs to step up, because I agree with Andy. I think of Casper, who I do think Celtic have been, you know, wrapping up in cotton wool a wee bit over the last couple of weeks. If he's not fit, then Tanetke might have to play meaningful minutes in the two games against Rangers, and he needs to up his game. I mean, he saw when he came on against Lask, I thought he was really, really weak, and he needs to follow Yang's example and just toughen up a little bit, I think.
What's the improvement been like? I think you were there, David Friel, up at the, remember at Lennox Town a couple of weeks ago, just to let a wee people peek behind the curtains to let them know that journalists act just the same as fans. Remember there was a wee debate in the press room before the press conference, where like some people were saying that is it time to admit Yang's actually pretty good? Like, he's pretty important, and other people were still sticking to that. Yeah, he's improved, but he's never the level, you know, that Celtic need to get to. Blah blah blah. What?
I was in the Yang gang that day.
Were you?
Gordon, yeah, with a dispute. I just think he's improved in so many different ways. But I think what people probably, you know, when he's, you know, young form player, he's only just turned 24. Yang. So you imagine, what's he been at Celtic now for 2 or 3 years? He was really young. It was a totally different environment he was coming into. He was expected to hit the ground running. You know, he's been tried to be compared to Jota and Kun. He's having to live up to all these expectations, dies in Maeda as well. He's taken a bit of time to settle, but I think the best thing that's happened to Yang was probably last season, just getting to run the team. Martin O'Neill loves him. You know, Martin O'Neill has worked under some really top players over the years, and he absolutely loves him. He loves his work rate. And I think a lot of players, like Gavin Strachan last year and Sean Maloney this year, have worked really hard with him as well. I just think you can see him growing in confidence all the time. And the way he took his goal the other night, you know, there was a lot of composure about it. And everything Celtic seemed to do the other night came down that left wing. So I was really, really impressed with him.
Celtic have spent a fair chunk of change trying to replace him at times as well, and he quite often still finds himself.
Oh, was he not in a motorway service station somewhere in the Birmingham area?
And for whatever reason, I think because Celtic couldn't get the winger in last transfer window, they had to keep him. And I honestly think it's been a blessing in disguise. He's got his new contract now. He's away to the Asian Games to try and win it, to try and get himself exempt from national service. Martin O'Neill basically said he's ordered him to go and win it, so that doesn't happen, because he would miss a fair chunk of his Celtic career if that's to be the case. But I honestly do, and I know Hugh will be turning the radio off right now, but fully in the Yang gang.
He has actually messaged me. I don't know if I'll read that. I don't want to cause a geopolitical dispute in that part of the world, just in case Andy's listening.
I can just imagine.
But yeah, is it true what Andy said though? If Casper Hughes fit, Camilo Duran will play wide. Now that's maybe, there's another argument there about whether that's optimum for Celtic at the moment. But is that how you soften the blow rather than Tonetki or the likes?
And even James Forrest might come in as well. Gordon, I just think Tonetki just needs to step up. He needs to step up in so many ways. But yeah, if Casper Hughes can come back and give Celtic that focal point through the middle lane, I think you've then got the option of playing Duran or Hassan on the wings, and you've got James Forrest maybe in reserve. But yeah, I think for Celtic's sake, I think they really need Casper Hu back just to provide that focal point.
I was just thinking, you know, on the weekend that we discussed summits and quotas, you imagine you had to represent your country to avoid national service here. I think that's for a different phone in. I don't know if we're qualified. 01419511025, good time to call. We'll get you on next. Clyde One. On Friday, we paid out more life-changing cash on Make Me a Winner to Leona. She's a nurse who's now going to emigrate to Australia with her partner Jordan and 4 kids. What would you do with £500,000? Text YES to 61025, text or 250, or you can actually get 5 entries for a fiver by texting MEGA to 61025. Now, standard network rates apply, over 18s only. If you enter at makemeawinner.co.uk, all the rules for this network competition are over there as well. Lines close 5 p.m. Friday. Good luck from us.
Talking football, 6 until 8, 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
David Freel and Andy Halliday are here. Feel free to jump in on anything we've discussed so far or move it on. Lauren Shankland, looks like the news coming out this evening, it's 3 months on the sidelines. Your reaction to that, Rangers fans? Celtic fans, we've had a bit on the refereeing decisions and VAR and frames and lines and all that sort of stuff. If you want to add your thoughts, we'd love to have them. And let's go back with Kevin, who's from Kilmarnock. How are you, Kevin?
Hi, good evening, how are you?
Good, thank you, all good. What are you thinking tonight then?
I just think it's actually mainly directed to Andy here. Sorry, Gary Neville.
That's not good for you, that.
So with Celtic fan, obviously we've got a few games coming up here. To me, there's been a few glaring issues this year. I just really think the midfield isn't balanced at all well. Everybody can kind of see that Cal McGregor needs a bit of help in there. I think Bauer's a really good player. He looks really neat and tidy. He doesn't have the physicality we need. I think Negrin's obviously started really well. He's been alright, but I think he needs Casper Hu. The kind of playoff, I just think with the St Johnstone game coming up and obviously Rangers, I just think their midfield lacks that bit of dynamism, that bit of physicality. I just want to hear what Andy kind of thinks of that, because Andy's usually spot on with these kind of things. So Just to kind of hear his view
on
it.
Go on, Gary. What are you giving it?
No, listen, I agree. I was never a massive fan of Arnie Ingles, not through the fact that I didn't think he was a good player. I just didn't see a £25 million player. But one thing that he brought Celtic's midfield was a bundle of energy and legs and the ability to go box to box. And I think the good thing about Celtic's midfield last year, where it was three completely different profiles. You have Callum McGregor, who dictates the tempo of the game, very disciplined in his shape. You've got Arnie Ingles, it's box to box, very good with set pieces. Then you've got Benjamin Negan, who can sniff out a goal, brilliant with third man runs into the box. And we were actually talking a wee bit about this off air at the top of the show. I'm still not quite sure what Bauer is. I think he looks as if he's pretty decent at everything without being outstanding at anything. I don't really think he looks as if he's got an outstanding attribute, but looks like a really comfortable football player. And I've said it for a couple of years now that I do think Callum McGregor needs help in bigger games, more specifically Europe. I think this single pivot, I think the modern day phrase for that Callum McGregor plays in, I think quite often gets left exposed in European football. Now for me, I think it'll be really interesting to see Celtic's approach when it comes to a double header against Rangers, because I envisage Rangers going really aggressive in their press at the top end of the pitch. What could it potentially be? An Oxlade-Chamberlain who is A, really comfortable in possession, but B, probably the most suited to play alongside Callum McGregor as a two in a holding midfield position. So, I don't disagree with you at all. I've not seen a whole lot of Sorensen yet. The one thing that really stood out in Paisley was his defence split and pass that he plays through for Tanetke, but it'll be interesting to see what type of a profile of midfielder he is.
I think he is more box-to-box. I think he would bring a lot more energy, I suppose, than Micah Bauer would. I agree with Andy. You know, Micah Bauer is very tidy on the ball and everything, but to me, especially going into the two Rangers games, I think that's the big decision for Martin O'Neill. You know, Negan's going to start because I don't think you can drop him with his goals and his assists and everything. Callum McGregor's a captain. It's just that one next to him. So, as Andy said, Kevin, do you go for the experienced Oxlade-Chamberlain? Do you go for Micah Bauer and get him to play a bit deeper? Or do you go for the legs of Sorensen? It's a real conundrum for Martin O'Neill.
Do you know what point I liked in Kevin's piece there was everyone has focused mostly on what Casper Hu's absence has done for Camilo Duran. It's done Camilo Duran wonders. He gets to play through the middle and he gets to score a lot of goals. But Kevin's brought up the perhaps detrimental effect it has on Benjamin Negrin, which isn't a fair point that I've not really heard mentioned loads, because everyone at the start of all this season kept talking about how much better Negrin looked. Do you think he does suffer then when Casper Hu's not on the team?
Maybe suffers the strong word, because
he's definitely been much quieter.
Yeah,
he
has been much quieter. I mean, he obviously linked up, I think, for Duran's his goal against Aberdeen. I think Negrin was involved, Negrin scores then. But I do agree. I think Negrin and Casper Hu immediately struck up a really good partnership. And I think what Negrin likes is a striker to hit and go and play off, as you say, Gordon. And the thing with Hu, I mean, he's held up playing, it wasn't amazing in every single game, but he's always available. And as I said, he gives Celtic that focal point. And I think that'll be so important against Rangers. Celtic are going to lose Zhang, but I think if they can get Hu back in the team, get Duran off him, get Hassan off him, and Negrin in around there, you know, Celtic would pack a punch at the top end.
So you're a bit worried going into the Rangers games, Kevin, that just that department isn't maybe what it needs to be?
I wouldn't say I'm overly worried. I just don't think it looks right. I've said it since last season. I thought it was glaringly obvious last season that we had major issues in midfield. This season, we've brought in players. I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain's a quality operator. Doesn't have the legs for me. He's the same. Him and Bauer, kind of, I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but they're neat and tidy. Oxlade-Chamberlain's range of passing's incredible, really is. But he doesn't have the legs, doesn't have the physicality. I think we just need like a big powerhouse in there, to be honest with you. I've not seen that boy for Torino play. I generally don't know anything about him, but to all accounts, he's a big lump. So, I mean, we do have a few issues for me, but I wouldn't say I'm only kind of scared about it. I just think it's as the panel was saying there, it's a bit of a conundrum for Martin O'Neill, who played in there. Negrin, as I said, I think he played brilliantly with Casper Hu. I think they just played off each other really well. They seem to have this kind of understanding. Do you drop Negrin? Like, obviously his goals and this, but do you drop him to play Oxlade-Chamberlain, maybe put Bauer in there? I don't know. There's a bit more kind of, you get more work rate out of that three than you would with Negrin, I think. That's unless Casper Hu plays. But I just think it's quite a tough one for Martin O'Neill, to be honest with you. But I really think the midfield's been an issue for us for a couple of years now. I just think we're missing something.
hate to say it, but since Scott Brown left, we've missed that physicality, that kind of running power. Engels, I wasn't a massive fan of Engels. I thought he was a really good player, but he didn't show it often. That for me, that was glaring last year, so it was.
I think also just because, like, I know he's not tall and big physically, but Pique Real-Hatate gave you that, didn't he? In a different way.
Yeah, he was really industrious in terms of, you talk about box-to-box and athleticism. I think more the physicality off the ball. I wouldn't say he was a powerhouse. I think Kevin used the phrase, but certainly he was industrious enough that he could get out the pitch pretty well. And to be honest, for what I've seen from Micah Bill, I think he does do that. And I think Micah Bill looks like a good football player. It's just that I don't see what he's amazing at yet. I don't know what he's going to bring this Celtic side, other than he's a really comfortable football player and quite capable of doing most things to a decent level.
Could Martin O'Neill, in any way, now we're talking about the wing position, could he stiffen things up and play a Sorensen off the left or something? Try and get Casper Hoeninger in, playing closer together. Could that be a wee curveball?
I think Martin O'Neill, obviously, in times gone past, he preferred that two striker formation, didn't he? But I don't know if Kevin agrees. For the very little I've seen of Hassan, I know he's still a little bit short of match fitness, but I'm glad I retired, because I wouldn't want to be left back playing against a guy that literally just wants to drive at his full back every time he gets the ball.
What did you think of him, Kevin? Because I just watched the game without having any real feelings about it, and then I saw a real split in opinions on social media from Celtic fans on kind of what they thought of Hassan so far.
Me and my mate were at the Aberdeen game, just sat watching him, and we both said the same thing. We were like, he's very fancy, he drives the ball, he gets to the byline, he'll beat a player. But he looked absolutely knackered that second half. He looked done, so he did, when that second half come on. I don't know, obviously a lack of fitness, but he kind of stopped beating the man. He stopped, that wee 1-2-3 yard explosiveness. And he tried to do all these wee fancy flicks, and the one they're coming off, which it can be frustrating, sitting there watching it. But obviously, you know, the other night there, he looked really good. I would say for kind of large parts, but to me, he doesn't track back enough, and that's the difference. I'm 100% in the Yang gang. The work that guy does is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. He's not the, I wouldn't say he's the best player in the world, but you can see why Martin O'Neill loves him with that work rate that he's got, that willingness to run for the team off the ball as well. I thought it was excellent.
Is this Yang gang? Is this a known thing? Is this like
I think it's like social media speak. Don't get me wrong, I think your algorithm probably gives you different stuff on social media. Don't know if you're in those chat rooms, but there we go. Anyway, thank you to Kevin from Kilmarnock, which almost to the second takes us up to time for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
You know it's a tough school on a Monday, and yet it doesn't put you off. Every week, the phone line's red hot, so let's see what we can do against David Friel or Andy Halliday. The lines close at 7, and Beat the Pundit is next.
6 till 8 weeknights. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard. 0141 951 1025.
Andy Halliday and David Friel are here. It's 0141 951 1025. That is the number that you need to get in touch. It's usual Monday night fare, where you're looking back on the weekend's action. That can be the good stuff on the pitch, some bad stuff, a manager's annoyed you, a refereeing decisions upset you, whatever. We're here for it all. 0141 951 1025. We had a bit of breaking news before the show, where Lauren Shankland's injury looks like it will be a 3-month layoff. So if you've any reaction to that, it would be good. And we'll play this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, Beat the Pundit time. Either David or Andy will take on Ross, who is on from Oban. How's it going, Ross? Ross, can you hear us? Good stuff. Have you ever played this before, Ross?
I've played it before, I bet. Mark Wilson.
That's easy though, isn't it? That's not saying much.
Saying that, no many championship teams can beat him.
Tougher tonight with you two. He's doing well. I can't believe he's been overshadowed by Oakleview Oracle.
The Oakleview Oracle.
My word. Right, Ross, I'll toss the coin. If it is the blue side of the coin, it'll be Andy Halliday. If it's the red side of the coin, it'll be David Friel. Andy Halliday's pointing down behind my
It's definitely there while I was having a cool down.
How am I supposed to reach this?
Do you want me to get it?
This is the beauty of live stream. You're not supposed to know that I've got my shorts on in here either. I've just stood up and shattered the illusion. There we go. What a service, Sandy Halliday. Oh, give me that beat the pundit coin. And let's see who plays tonight. It is Blue. Oh, hurry up, get back in your chair, Andy Halliday.
Run down the night.
It's you. You did mention that. Are you okay? Wee man flu. Is
no,
it?
I'm alright. I'm alright.
How was your? I noticed on your open goal vlog, you were away seeing Jens.
I was.
Still loving him as much as before.
Even more so. Seeing him do it in a foreign country, although they've not managed to win the game. Or win a game this season, but
their XG is really high.
Exactly.
That's what matters. Right, let's give Andy something else to listen to. Ross, you have 30 seconds. Answer as many as you can and pass if you do not know the answer. All good?
All good, Dan.
Right, 30 seconds on the clock and your time starts now. Before St Mirren, who was the last team Celtic beat after losing at half time?
Normal.
Which Rangers player is on loan at Middlesbrough?
Bonabang.
Name the only Scottish team Glenn Whelan played for.
Hearts.
What was the score in the last Scotland men's game?
4-1.
Antoine Griezmann now plays club football in which country?
America.
How many Scottish Championship sides are unbeaten in the league?
Two.
Name any Scottish top flight side Stephen Presley hasn't played for.
Hibs.
Okay, Andy Halliday, can you hear us?
Yes.
Good, same set of questions, 30 seconds on the clock. Your time starts now. Before St Mirren, who was the last team Celtic beat after losing at half time?
Kelly.
Which Rangers player is on loan at Middlesbrough?
Conor Barron.
Name the only Scottish team Glenn Whelan played for.
Hearts.
What was the score in the last Scotland men's game?
3-0.
Antoine Brazil. Griezmann now plays club football in which country?
America.
How many Scottish Championship teams are unbeaten in the league?
Two.
Name any Scottish top flight side that Stephen Presley has not played for.
Motherwell.
Okay. Ross, what's the verdict?
I'll be quite tight, to be fair.
Yeah, you were good, Ross.
I didn't get a Scotland question.
You were good.
Some tough ones in there.
Yeah, there were actually some.
First one.
Some tough ones. Yeah, before St Mirren, who was the last team Celtic beat after losing at half time? It was Kilmarnock.
Oh, it was 3-2.
You need to get up really early to beat this guy, honestly, because already one up. That was tough. Remember it last year, Julian Araujo, etc. After that, Ross really showed his class. Conor Barron is at Middlesbrough, correct. Glenn Whelan played for Hearts, correct. You let yourself down, Ross. It was a 3-0 to Brazil, which Andy Halliday got. But again, you hung in. You knew that Griezmann played in America. Have you seen that clip of him? I think that's clearly why the question's in there. He's dying in the humidity.
He did play in Spain for a long time.
No, I saw people pointing that out, but the humidity is different level. That's why we get beat 3-0 off Brazil, obviously. Two Championship sides unbeaten in the league. It's all thanks to us, clearly. We mentored and educated Mark Wilson and Marvin Bartley. The top flight side Stephen Presley hasn't played for. There are a few, but Ross was correct with Hibs. Andy was correct with Motherwell. So that means Andy Halliday's tucked you away, Ross. You were not bad at all. I think you got a 5, maybe.
Wow.
I think it was and lost on a 5.
Well done, Ross. I'm lucky.
I think my last 3 wins, I've only had 3 as well.
Ross, phone back literally any other night and you'll win. 5's really good, but you picked a tough evening. You ready to go for the 10?
I've only had 1-10.
Have you? Even in your long, illustrious
beat. I think I've only had one.
Right, okay. Give me the dramatic music. Who was Rangers' shirt sponsor when they reached the UEFA Cup final in 2008? Come on.
No, I know I can see it, the black and the red.
Yeah, exactly. I think even I'd get that.
Carlin.
Correct.
Wow. Just about that, wasn't he timed?
Ex-Celtic... Seriously? Sorry, I've given the answer. Not quite. Ex-Celtic striker Mark Viduka is the cousin of which Ballon d'Or winner?
Oh, come on!
Seriously?
What is that?
I'm not sure about this, but I have to trust...
Do you know it?
Well, I'm not like... Can I give clues?
No, no clues.
It's going to be too easy. I know what you're going to say.
The cousin of a Ballon d'Or winner?
Yeah. Nah, if you don't know it, you won't know it.
Oh wait, it's not going to be Brazil.
Oh, here we go, hurry up.
Michael Owen.
Luka Modric.
It's Luka Modric.
Come on.
Viduka, Viduka was like of Croatian heritage. So there we go. Unlucky Andy Halliday.
Fascinating though.
It was. Exactly. You'll never forget that now.
I always thought that was an urban myth.
May well be. We've just repeated it as fact.
What number was that?
Nine.
Oh.
You would have absolutely detested number 10 as well.
What was number 10?
I think they try and put you off getting the 10, and I don't know why. I think it's good.
How's Roger at 12 then?
I know, because they've started adding these stupid questions in. A 2006 Scotland Euro qualifier was moved to Celtic Park because Hampden was double booked by which singer? Who cares? I don't understand.
2006?
No idea.
Robbie Williams?
It's Robbie Williams.
I wouldn't have said that. That's outstanding.
That is very good.
Oh, anyway, devastating.
Rosswell, we've got you. Who's your team? You're a Rangers fan, was that right?
Rangers, aye. Rangers.
What do you make of Lawrence Shankland? 3 months on the sidelines.
I'll be a miss, definitely be a miss, but hopefully the new Kelsey boy will do a shift in, so that's him and Trinity missing, it will be tough. But yeah.
Do you see
the last couple of games have been better?
You think the price tag, obviously, just you see Kevin, you can't see Ryan Nadiri making that position his own?
Nah, not for me, no. I think he's had his chance. He's not shown that he's good enough, I don't think.
We've not learned loads about Kevin Kelsey, obviously. Profile wise, could you do him and Nadiri, Andy, or is that, again, I don't know, not really seen enough?
I've not seen enough, but for the small sample size that we've seen Rangers put to up front this season, I think they've really struggled. So I think due to Chimity's injury, due to Lon Shankton's poor form at that point in time, Rangers almost stumbled across the 4-2-3-1, and then when Minsoo Kim came into the team and played behind that striker, I just thought it gave him a completely different dimension. I thought it suited that lone striker, having his energy and dynamic moving around about them. So I'd be very, very surprised if they altered away for that shape.
Any way back for Miovski, Ross?
Nah, I don't think. I'd rather Miovski than Nadiri all the same. But
really?
It seems to be that for me, I think Miovski gives you more than Nadiri. I do think.
Okay, thank you.
It doesn't seem to be that he's very much on the pitch on Miovski, so it looks like he's away.
Thank you very much to Ross, who actually pretty good on Beat the Pundit. Got a 5, but Andy Halliday was still too good. Didn't get any wrong in regulation time. Just made a mess of.
Kelly was a good day. Good shoot. Educated stab.
Yeah, that was really good. And thanks for nearly knocking me off my seat with that sneeze a minute ago.
Sorry.
Just brilliant. That was Ross on 01419511025. Let's go straight to Jack in Pollock. How are you, Jack? Jack, can you hear us? Let's swap Jack's phone line. Do you remember Saturday night? Every single caller I tried to speak to
just wouldn't confer.
And I do think it must have just been some sort of issue with the phone line. So we'll get him on the other one. Jack, can you hear us now?
Hi mate, alright.
How are you? What's your thoughts tonight then?
I think the thoughts is Shanklin's injury, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's the start to probably play Bioski over Nadiri.
Second call in a row said that. Seriously, you're not having Ryan Nadiri?
Nah, all the new signing, Kelvin Kesley.
Oh, come on, you.
Well, after that, Jack.
After 20 minutes or whatever, that's nonsense. Surely you're at it.
Well, you need to give him a chance, but you can't play him in this first old derby.
Alright, okay.
Season.
All right, okay, fair enough. You mean generally for that. Ryan Nadiri, Andy, where are you on him then? Because he's the match winner at the weekend. He couldn't have missed it, obviously. You don't hold that against him. You know, he has to still go and put himself in the position. But clearly, you know, it's not like you maybe don't get the same credit attached to it as you would in other types of goal. But that's two callers in a row, not necessarily chuffed with him as being the main striking option.
Yeah, ultimately, I give it as my howler of the week. It certainly was a howler for Poulsen, but I think even his desire to close it down, I think that's something that you can never take away for Ryan Nadiri. I think he's got superb work rate. And I was a bit of a Ryan Nadiri defender at the start. I don't know if you remember this, the first sort of 2-3 months of his tenure last year. I was a bit of a defender because I think you could see raw attributes. You could certainly see signs of potential. But then I think he has had a fair amount of opportunities to stake his claim as the starting number 9, and for me, not took it. Now, coming into this season, Rangers signed 2 players. So they signed 2 players to essentially not have Ryan Nadiri as a starting number 9. But it's got to be said, due to Lawrence Shankland's dip in form and Yusuf Chimiti's injury when he had to come in, I think he's kind of riding the crest of a wave at this moment in time, with probably his best 2-3 week period as a Rangers player. Scored a goal in Europe, backed up a couple of goals domestically as well. I think he is full of energy. I just don't know. I think Rangers have to get to a point where their striker's scoring 20 league goals. No, Rangers, the last time Rangers had a striker that scored 20 league goals was, I think it was Kenny Miller and Nikita Jelovic in 2011, 15 years ago.
Dessels never get to that.
Never, no. 20 league goals. Never. I did Alfredo Morelos. None of these guys since 2011. I'm sure it was Nikita Jelovic. Rangers have to get to a point where their starting striker scoring 20 league goals. Now, I think Lorne Shanklin would have been that guy. I think if Yusuf Chemita stayed fit throughout the course of the season, based on the last 6 months of last season, I think there's a fair opportunity. I would have very, very little confidence of Ryan Nadiri getting 20 league goals.
You as certain as Jack, David, that you just can't suddenly play, you know, Kevin Kelsey. Why not? I mean,
no, because he's also been playing.
He'll certainly get game time of some description tomorrow.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he starts on Wednesday. I think the one I don't expect to start in the games is probably Bounani, because Derek McInnes was speaking about him. I don't think he's really played at all over the course of pre-season, just the odd few minutes here and there. But I think he'll be given time. But no, I think Kevin Kelsey will be propelled in. In terms of Ryan Nadiri, to touch on Andy, I don't think he's a guy that's going to score 20 goals, but I do think he has attributes. I sometimes think with Nadiri, he doesn't really pass the eye test. He can look a bit awkward in the way he plays, and you know, maybe
what was the goal? Yeah, they're not getting stick for a goal recently because he nearly missed it, but
yeah,
but he still scored
the one against Jablonec.
And even
the St Mirren one comes off his thang, and it's still a goal. And you need to, you know, I always think sometimes, you know, if strikers score, they kind of goals, and it's always in the right place at the right time, and they all count type thing. I just don't think, like Andy's going to be a 20 goal a season Rangers striker, but I do think he'll play his part.
I think as well, what's important for me is if you're going to be more of a foil of a striker to supply others round about them. Are you confident Jeddah Gassama would get double digits? Do you think Minshew Kim potentially could, but at this moment in time, would you say he could get double digits? Could Finlay Curtis get double digits? Now, I look at Celtic and think if their striker goes through a dip in form, whether it's Kasper Hu, they've got Negrin, they've got Camilo Duran, they've got Yang. So I think they still have goals throughout the pitch. I think at this moment in time, other than Lorne Shanklin, Rangers are really searching to see who they players are.
What did you make of the weekend overall, Jack? Was that the best league performance so far? Obviously people fancied Motherwell a bit because of their form, so was that a comfortable win?
I wouldn't say it was the best league performance so far, because there should have been more than one goal in the game. We took so many chances and we didn't really score the goals that we should have took. Obviously the re-signing we signed missed the penalty as well.
Yeah, you knew that Lorne Shanklin going off, there's going to be a kind of new penalty taker, if you like. Rangers have been always so settled in that department. For years it was James Tavernier. It looked like Lorne Shanklin would just settle in seamlessly. Is that then back up for grabs now? Is that the way it works? Minshew Kim doesn't get the next one.
What did surprise me was the fact that Minshew Kim and Gassama almost had that battle for 15-20 seconds to see who's going to take it, because every manager I've ever worked under will have their penalty taker
in order.
If he's not on the pitch, they have the next one. I was James Tavernier's deputy for a few years, if you remember. So I was surprised that it got to that. No, I'm not saying that's why he missed, but I always hate the type of distractions for any penalty taker. No, almost having to argue to get the ball instead of just focusing on the task at hand. But that being said, it was a really poor penalty. I'm of the mindset, if you miss the target, it's a terrible penalty. And I think Minshew Kim's been good since he's came in. I think he's looked really bright. But like any player that's bought for big money, especially one at the top end of the pitch, you want to get off the mark as quick as you possibly can. And he's had opportunities in every game almost. Yokota's been the same, and he missed an absolute glaring opportunity in the second half, as well as Kevin
Kelsey. It's amazing how quickly. Did you ever take any for Motherwell, by the way? I remember it, pre-season one. Ever in
one in a competitive game. St Johnstone at McDermott Park, opening 5 minutes, just slotted that away.
Went on to lose, though, yeah.
That one, no. I think the following week we did. Following week we lost 2-1 in the cup.
That wasn't a good venue for a couple of seasons. I digress. All I see Yokota, like, very quickly. I mean, he's played a couple of games and already has gone from Rangers fans liking him to now being concerned about him so quickly. Is that just the world we live in?
Yeah, it's, and also the fact that Rangers brought in a right winger on deadline day, Gordon. You know, I don't think that helps him. You know, he's the guy they brought in for money, £3 million, whatever it was, permanently. And then if you look at the profile of Bounani, he looks a better player, certainly more valuable than Yokota. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think Finlay Curtis has done really, really well. Nailing down his place in the team as well. And as Andy said, Gassama, I think, is going through, you know, one of his best moments in a Rangers jersey. He just has to keep doing it consistently then. He's struggling here.
I was about to ask him something. I saw him lining up one of those sneezes. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
I actually can't remember what the question was. I'm almost certain it wasn't a particularly
was
good one.
Quota.
Yeah, I know. There was something else before that that was bothering me that I wanted to get your opinion on from a Rangers perspective. There we go. Sometimes if you talk long enough, it comes back to you. On the subject of your quota, Kevin Kelsey, this came up a bit at the weekend where Rangers fans weren't satisfied because, or as satisfied as they could be, because it should have been more. And I said at the weekend, I don't want to come across all XG, but you won't miss those chances every week. I sometimes think we're, as a nation, very harsh on ourselves when you think that, you know, you got this notion that teams turn up and miss sitters like every week. They don't. Just statistically,
they don't. But
they'll
I do think the worry is it's the games where you might only have one or two of them, okay, where they have to score them. And I even though they were convincing margins of victory, I thought Celtic didn't have a particularly great game against Dundee United at Tannadice and won 4-0 because it just felt like every opportunity they got, they scored. Lask at Celtic Park, the exact same. Didn't have a multitude of opportunities, but the opportunities they got, they scored. There has to be a point where Rangers, they have to win games ugly. At this moment in time, there's been a couple of them, but they have to show a real ruthless streak when they get glaring opportunities like they do. You need to put them away, especially when you factor in the amount of money they've spent and these guys at the top end of the pitch. Because I think, David mentioned it earlier, I think Osama, Minsu Kim and Finlay Cutters are all playing pretty well at the moment, but none of them have scored a goal. Yokota's not scored a goal. So ultimately you need to get numbers. At this moment in time, you've got Kasper, who, Camilo, Durant and Negrin on 3 league goals. For Rangers, it's Lon Shankland on 3 league goals, and then there's 2 own goals and Ryan Nadiri.
Thank you very much to Jack. 01419511025. Give us a call. We'll speak to you next.
It's Game On Until 8. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
David Friel and Andy Halliday are here. 0141 951 1025 is the number, so jump on board, get in touch, let us know what you're thinking. Don't let this man's research go to waste either. Andy Halliday is, honestly, he's been called a lot tonight, someone likened him to Gary Neville. He is so invested in this debate about the summit, the quotas for young players and all the rest of it. He's been away doing his own research all weekend. So if you want to get your theories across to him, then please do before we disappear.
I never brought my actual facts and figures as well.
You told me you were bringing your book. Up there. Good, up, right. Yeah. Let me give you the question before we move on.
The full-time teaser with Arcaplan Glasgow. Planning permission and building warrant drawings for home extension, conversion or renovation.
Right, how are you with your geography? I actually think you'll squish it. Nah, you'll squish it. I'm exaggerating. It doesn't require much. It was thanks to Kevin who sent it in. Badreddine Bouanani is the latest, but who are the last 10 players from Africa to play for Rangers? So Badreddine Bouanani has signed. Who are the last 10 Africans to play for Rangers?
Kenya.
Correct. You liking what you're seeing from him?
Very much so. I think he's the best at the bunch so far.
Any chance I can convince you that he caught Maswanisi late after he shot at Ivan Pander at the weekend? No,
I don't think he can convince me in that one. Do you know who he reminds me of? Another African. I don't know if I'm going to be guessing him on this, but he does. He's got a Maggio Bighera about him.
Not on the last 10.
No, that wasn't a guess. I'm just saying.
Modi Amandi.
Yep. One more guess from you, Andy.
Chiga.
Yes, okay, let's leave it there. Okay, plenty more time to get them. And by the way, it's fulltime at Clyde1.com. If you want to get your questions in, please.
How many?
Do 10, the last, okay, 10. David's a Rangers fan as well. Then we'll get to George. David, first up, what's your thoughts tonight, David?
Hi, how you doing, panel? All right?
Good, thank you. Good, are you?
I am good, thank you.
Good, good.
Just
good
at working. So, one of my points is I heard you talk about the penalty taker there, after Shankland. I don't know if you actually know what Gassama and Minsu done rock, paper, scissors on Saturday to see who was hitting it.
I didn't. I take David's word for it. Did you? Were you an eyewitness, David? You see them?
Yep, I seen it. There's a wee clip as well. You can see them just slightly doing it.
Best of three, or just a one and done?
Just one and done.
Oh, I suppose it's time. Got to be time efficient.
It's got to be the best of three.
I know. It's a bit more of a representation, isn't it? God, I've got me thinking now.
Is that acceptable? Is that acceptable that we're doing that?
You asking Andy?
I've always been in the mindset that when you work on it in training, the manager picks the number one and the number two. So a game of rock, paper, scissors wouldn't be my choice. But I give you, David, the best of three all day.
Well, Nadiri actually had the ball and Gassama took it off him.
I wouldn't trust Nadiri all that much.
No. Just my other wee point was about, I'm a big McInnes fan. I wanted him at Rangers maybe 2 years ago, like some people. But I just felt on Saturday he'd be taking Gassama off. He looked a wee bit, Gassama looked a wee bit annoyed when he was walking round. I was sitting in Easton Close on when he walked round and he got substituted. He was obviously clapping and stuff, but I just thought taking him off and it was his best game. I don't think Finlay Curtis is the best of games on Saturday. I thought Gassama was well better. I don't know what you think, maybe just with the games coming up, do you think they're just managing his time? Or?
What I think is I'm getting you on every week because you're a good eyewitness. David spots all the hidden moments from Ibrox, Andy. Is that something you...
Well, I don't know if you noticed, I did another phantom sneeze just as it... So, did they say he was disappointed that Gassama came off and he thought the Finlay Curtis looked tired? Was that right? I was mid-sneeze.
Yeah, and you said you thought Gassama looked a bit annoyed. Is that right, David?
Yeah, Gassama was very, very effective. I just think Finlay Curtis is a kind of quieter game, but... and then, obviously, he brought him off. I thought he would have took Curtis off. That's what we were sitting, like most of the people thought.
Yeah, I thought I actually thought Finlay Curtis had a 30-minute spell where him and Penrice had a brilliant understanding on the left-hand side when Gassama actually came off. But I completely agree. We actually think Gassama has been Rangers' best player so far this season. I think the bar is quite low. But I do think he's... I've always kind of gave Jerry Gassama a pass, even when fans have been on his back, because I just always like my wingers to be positive. And I think Jerry Gassama is someone that, regardless of the team's performance, regardless of his own individual performance, I think he's always extremely positive when he gets the ball. Now, what he needs to add, undoubtedly, through his progression, is numbers at the top end of the pitch. You know, we just spoke about the strikers that Rangers have got and available at this moment in time, and there's going to be a lot more of an onus on A, Ryan Nadiri to score more goals on a consistent basis, and B, Kevin Kelsey got up to speed and be the number 9 that Rangers want him to be. But you look at the wingers and the number 10s, these guys at the top end of the pitch have to start adding numbers, because I mentioned, you know, it's been a long time since a striker for Rangers has scored 20 league goals. I'm pretty sure the last time a midfielder scored 20 double figure league goals was Barry Ferguson in 2003. That's an even more mental stat when you consider the midfielders that Celtic have had over recent years scoring them a barrel load of goals. Benjamin Negan's right under our nose, he did it last year. But double figures for league goals, for me that has to be a target for the likes of Minsu and Gassama and guys in these areas.
Anything else to pick up on from Ibrox before we move? What did you make of the penalty award, by the way? You missed it anyway, but
I think it probably was a penalty. I know there's been a lot of talk about it and everything.
Mark Clattenburg saying it was beyond soft or something.
I'm not saying it was the... Well, how soft's a penalty? If it's a penalty, it's a penalty.
Oh, don't go all boiled egg on me or whatever.
I couldn't really get on top of it, to be honest with you. I just thought it was a penalty.
You know, I'm consistent with these ones. It very much falls under the category. If it's given, I can understand it. If it's not given, I'm certainly not up in arms. I do think it is all the soft fire.
It wouldn't be overturned either way, sort of thing.
Yeah, but I do think it's soft. I think what makes it more of a penalty than not is the fact that Jerry Gassama is in the air, so any type of contact, you are in there. But I always think with guys like Jerry Gassama, the way they go down, I always think it makes it look so much worse. But ultimately, I do think it's a soft penalty.
David, thank you very much for taking the time. Any more on that teaser? You two, Badreddine Bounani signed, who are the last 10 players from Africa to play for Rangers. You've got Makanya, Diomande and Jiga.
Igamani.
Yep. Moroccan.
Fernandez.
Yeah, Nigerian. Okay, let's bring in George, who's on the line. How are you, George?
Yes. I do think it's soft. George, can you turn your radio off?
Let's get George moved on to the other line and hopefully we'll get his radio turned on. The last thing I need is to hear you sneeze again. A sneeze on delay. That's the last thing anybody needs on their Monday night. So let's get that radio turned off. Right, George, we've got you now. How are you doing?
Not bad, buddy. Good evening, everyone out there.
What are you thinking, George? What are you thinking?
Thank you, mate. Looking basically at the game on Saturday night, the decisions after last season, guys, we had the... Was it a handball? Wasn't it a handball? Was it a kick? Was it in the penalty? Was it outside? This nonsense has to stop. We've got Timu after a kick-off. It's definitely a low budget. I don't know why that is, guys, because it's the same as every other country. If not, then we should be looking to take it up into the levels of to scrap it all together, because it clearly does not work at this moment in time. The decisions against Celtic were absolutely shocking. I've never seen so many bad decisions in one game after the nonsense we had last season. Can't believe we've allowed this to happen again. And it's only a matter of time, guys, before this explodes. Whether it's Wednesday night or whatever, two old Clitheroe games coming up, this is going to explode, guys. The decisions, and I've noticed this, everybody goes, oh, decisions, Celtic get all these decisions, I'll tell you. See if I can, I'll send the facts to you. I'll calculate all the decisions that went against Celtic in the last 10 years. It's absolutely astounding how referees turn their back and they were given a penalty against us for balls hitting elbows and knees and players looking the other way and it's hitting their elbow and they're getting penalties against. It's disgraceful, guys. This system was brought in to change of it, to be the best after fix the decisions that went wrong over the years. It's went worse. It's going to explode into absolute chaos very soon.
What decisions in particular are you not happy about from Saturday, George?
Not happy with the Liam Scales push, the two-handed push that Aberdeen get the boy get his goal disallowed against Rangers. It's the exact same position, the exact same two-handed push. In fact, I thought Scales was the one that was worse. The Duran goal, the one that Yang chipped it over. See if it's not a goal, guys. He was getting strangled to death with the defender. Where's the decisions? It's disgraceful. It's disgraceful. This is a nightmare.
I love how you try to get some sense of perspective. Strangled to death.
I do think the Scales one, and looking back to it, was I think it was at Paul Incio. I think he did tread very, very closely to giving a penalty away there. In terms of the other ones, look, we've been over it in the first half of the show, George. In terms of the Duran one, I think the problem, the confusion was that the Sky replay wasn't the actual kick point that VAR were using. And with the other one, it was pretty much a case of the lines couldn't be drawn. The ref had to go and basically agree that the goal was offside. But, I mean, did you think Shimueka was onside for the second one?
That one's very difficult, guys. I've got to admit on that decision. I thought that was very, very difficult. In my opinion, on real time, I thought he was offside.
Right.
The same as the first decision, guys. I thought in real time, I thought Duran, I thought that was offside. But I thought he got strangled. I thought he was getting. I wondered if he was going to be fit enough to continue.
Stop it! Stop it!
I'm not sure if George is having us on, but I like it all the same.
I'll need to go watch it again.
Fair enough to continue. What did you make of the Liam Scales one?
Do you know what? I think that's the only one for me that's semi-contentious.
That
again, if that's given as a penalty kick, I'm not in here on Monday giving it as my hour of the weekend. I'm of the mindset, when you're a defender and you shove anyone in the box when it goes in close proximity, which is important here, I think you run the risk. So if a foul was given Paul and CEO, I wouldn't have had many complaints. I would have still thought it'd been on the soft variety, but I wouldn't have had much complaints.
I thought you were revisiting the one a bit from Aberdeen. It's like it is hard to gauge force and what's enough and what isn't. So we need to kind of be honest about that and then admit that those are quite marginal, they are subjective. The problem is, obviously, if you're a Celtic fan, you see that one, you know, being given a knot, and it's very hard to compare exact force. I've seen a real kind of close analysis from people saying that they felt that Scales was kind of already at the top of his jump and wasn't getting to the ball, and therefore the push didn't put him off. But these are, you know, like I say, we're sort of splitting hairs either way.
And they're always going to be compared, as you know, as George said, the one up in Aberdeen and then the one on Saturday. I agree with Andy. I think he was being ropey a wee bit, Paul, and so I think he did tread the lines, but obviously the referee didn't give it.
And see the back to the kind of original point, Timu VAR or whatever it was, where I think this sometimes gets, like, everybody would like more cameras. It would be nice to have the same as England, semi-automated offsides, automated offside, good, add them on as well. But when George sounded genuinely confused, it's, I don't know what that's down to. Well, I know what it's down to.
Cash.
Right, look at it. So see when you're in the stand, don't mean to be too like sort of cruel about it, but look around at the players that are playing. Like, the richest league in the world has all the cameras, has the automated. There's a reason we don't, and that's sort of in line with, you know, where our where our game is at.
Jake Moore Cameron's would have picked up the severe strangulation in the box.
Well, the ironic thing is, right, again, I've just in case anyone has kind of forgotten the numbers, obviously this stuff's ingrained in me, you're allowed in FIFA's eyes to run VAR off four cameras, right? As a minimum, we have six. That was a Sky game the other night, so more, I didn't count. You're probably
at least eight,
you'd be up at 12 or 13 probably. So the number of cameras the other night, it probably isn't an issue. You see, if that's a Saturday 3 o'clock game, there's going to be half that number. So I'm not sure that would have made much difference. And see, something else that we definitely overlook in terms of the way it comes across, the perception. You could have a camera right in the 18 yard box, right, along the line. See St Mirren, Ross County, when they were in the top flight. I know it sounds really basic, the stands are very small, so the camera is low down. So it's one thing saying we should have more cameras, blah blah blah, but that would look a whole lot better if that was 20 feet higher in the air, as it is in England. Since I'm not going to bash other clubs, at Fir Park, the main stand only runs
a certain length,
two thirds of the way down. So it would be great to have more cameras. It would be great to have automated offsides. That costs a fortune. And then you've got to take stuff like that into account as well. I think that's why sometimes it maybe looks sort of worse than it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I would also still say, and you'll back me up, the stats that VAR gets more right than it gets wrong. Is that not right?
Well, listen, so they say, but then I do still think there's a good debate there about whether that's worth it, though, because for your fan experience and all that stuff. But again, something George said about... So see right now, if you're a Celtic fan, like George, who wants to take away after the other night, what about the last day of the season?
Yeah.
Where Daizen Maeda is flagged offside when he's about 3 yards onside. That goal without VAR doesn't stand. Celtic don't win the league. And so it's very hard, because in the longer this goes on, the longer it's been in place, clearly every team is going to have it go for you, every team's going to have it go against you. And I think that's the bit where you need to weigh up in your head, is it worth it? Because I think I actually respect that more than anything. See, if you just say, I just don't like it, I just don't like the feeling of it, I don't like the impact it has in the game, I don't like the stoppages, I don't like not knowing what's going on, that to me actually carries more weight than this fake belief that you can actually count up how many decisions went for you and against you, when some of them are subjective anyway.
I think there could be a world with no VAR protect, but I don't think we can ever go back to no offsides.
Offsides, yeah.
I think that the offsides being factual, I do think they've made a massive difference. Is Josh still there?
No, he's away. Phone 999 for something. The vicious assault. What was your question going to be?
Well, I was going to ask him. He said he's never seen so many poor decisions, but he only disagreed with one, because he said strangulation on Duran, that would have still been offside.
Strangulation.
So the only one he disagreed with was Scales.
Anyway, right, thank you very much to George. We'll get the rest of the answers to the teaser. More of your calls. Come on, Andy Haldy's been memorising all these stats about youth football and minutes and quotas and all that stuff. Put them to the test. We'll maybe talk about that next.
Taking your calls 7 days a week, weeknights, Saturdays and Sundays, 4 till 7. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Andy Halliday and David Friel are here. They're working their way through this teaser. I think they'll scoosh it with Badreddine Bouanani signing. Who are the last 10 players from Africa to play for Rangers? You've got Macania, Fernandez still there at the moment. Diomande just left. Giga's loan finished last year. Igaman is another one.
I forgot about another one.
Okay.
I forgot. So I'll go with Gasana.
Yes, Mauritania, isn't it?
The most maligned player in Scottish football history, Cyril Dessers.
One more guess.
Sakala.
Yeah, from Zambia. Okay, let's leave it there. We'll try and get the other two before the end of the show. And another reminder, it's fulltime at Clyde1.com if you want to submit a question and have it used on the show, just like Kevin did this evening. And thanks to our sponsors, Arcaplan Glasgow, as well. Now, usually we tidy up the loose talking points on a Monday night that we've not got round to, and there are a lot, because it's important to note that Hearts are up to second. It's important to note that Aberdeen are not having a good time. Come on, I get a point on the board up there. Hibs maybe in a bit of bother. But I do feel like the biggest story of the weekend that we've not mentioned is this summit that Craig Mulholland didn't want to call a summit, but it was too late. I think that was already given to him. And he came in here on Saturday, spoke very well. I know he was on other radio stations as well. Andy, you saw the presentation. Are you sold on these proposals then? Get two Scottish under 21 players to start every cup game with one on the pitch at any one time. Then in the league, an average of 60 minutes per game across the season. So it doesn't need to be 60 minutes every game. That one is slightly financially incentivised. It's a small amount of money, but it's incentivised. And if you don't do that, you get 10% of your league prize money withheld, and it gets distributed across the teams who do fulfil that quota, if you like. You're all for it, yeah?
Yes, I'm all for it. Absolutely. I don't think it's too much to ask at all. I was really impressed with the presentation. I knew we were in dire straits, but seeing the numbers and the analytics in front of you, comparing it to other nations as well, it made it even more worrying. There were certain parts of the slide I wasn't aware of.
Like, so maybe tell us a bit more about it, because, you know, like, as Craig Mulholland gave the presentation to the clubs, you've seen it. That whole bit hasn't been made public. He's come on here, he's done a series of interviews, but there's a lot of detail maybe that people don't know.
Well, what really interested me was the Mythbuster segment, because I think a lot of the arguments against a homegrown quota coming back were pretty much dispelled for me. A big one that people talk about is the ongoing pressure on managers to get results now or they'll be sacked. Well, the analytics and the data shows that Scotland are actually the third lowest in Europe in terms of sacking managers, so that's almost dispelled, because the other nations obviously have homegrown mm-hmm. quotas in there. What one I found really, really interesting, it actually took me aback a little bit, is I've heard a lot of people saying, why now? We've just qualified for three of the last four major tournaments, and you see the minutes that the current Scotland squad played when they were 21 or under compared to our 21 and under now. So pretty simply put is, yes, we're qualifying three out of four, the last four major tournaments, but if we don't change now, how can the future equate to that when you look at the lack of football they're actually playing? So I found that one startling, because that is one that I wasn't aware of at all.
I obviously saw the presentation. I was fortunate enough, if that's the phrase, to sort of host the summit or do the Q&A and introduce the guests and so on. I actually was more interested in the sort of kind of culture and mindset, David, and how that compares, because yeah, the stats are really good and there's a lot of research in it, and I think debunking the myths is so important, because everybody says the league's too small, too much pressure, so managers won't play young players. And straight away, because rather than just accepting that as the truth, the presentation says, well, actually, as Andy notes, in other leagues you're more likely to get sacked because they do churn managers quicker, and yet they still blow us out the water with young players. But for me, what I thought was unbelievable was the quotas in other countries that exist. In Norway, you need 16 yeah. Norwegians. Let me repeat that. 16 Norwegians in every match day squad.
They're doing okay, aren't they?
And they're clearly accepting of that. And so when you then consider that, by the way, and what I also liked about Craig Mulholland, he's not saying it's perfect, he's not saying it's flawless, he's not saying it will fix everything. But some people here are all up in arms about the thought of playing two in a cup game, and there are other nations out there that do 16. That to me feels like too big a gap.
Yeah, it is. And I was really surprised when you said, I think there was 31 countries in Europe, was it?
31 countries have got a quota, and we're now worried yeah. about this.
And some clubs had said to him, I thought you were going to go further with the rules, because, I mean, you're talking about the Norway one. I know in Hungary, they have to have five, and this was a new rule brought in, I think, last season. They have to have five Hungarians under a certain age, yep. or obviously in their team at all times. Yeah.
And they
just put that in.
They brought it in yeah. with no warning, no backlift. Yeah. Get them in your team now.
And that's what happened.
Can you imagine that here?
I think Ferencváros at that point in time had none. So they actually had to go and
to go and recruit them. But to me, see, back to what you said, Gordon, about a mentality shift. It has to have a mentality shift. The clubs need to, you know, you can talk about rules, you can talk about incentivise, all that sort of stuff. They have to be. It has to be a mentality shift, and they have to look at, I mean, Craig was talking on Saturday about stories, selling stories. Lennon Miller's a story. Calvin Ramsey, I was watching Calvin Ramsey on Saturday night at the St Mirren game. He was a story that played a lot for Aberdeen and got his big move. This can work. This definitely can work, but I think the clubs need to want it to work. And we spoke as well that Bruges, who are a great example of what is possible in terms of generating cash, Bruges gave a big talk on what they do and how much of their revenue it's worth. And I don't think anybody can watching that presentation can walk away and say this is a bad idea.
I think also is, again, it's funny how a lot of the counter arguments, Andy, are like, yeah, but you should be fixing grassroots football, or you should the standard of coaching has to be better, or the facilities have to be better. It's all well and good, and again, I think what at least was encouraging, so whether you like these proposals or not, is this stuff has been thought of, this is being acknowledged. It's just about trying to maybe pinpoint kind of one big priority item first, and then I think, in fairness to Craig Mulholland, I think he's been in the job about seven weeks.
Well, it's important you say that, because actually after I watched the presentation, as much as I thought it was brilliant, I actually questioned, I'm going to sneeze again.
Right, okay.
I'm trying to, I actually questioned or queried two or three things, but I completely understood and agreed with his answers. So
his eyes are filling up.
I know, I'm doing everything to fight it back.
What did you query?
So the big one in particular was the league size, because on the slide before, he was going through all the nations in Europe and the transfer revenue they've accumulated for homegrown players, but then in the very next slide, it was league size wasn't an issue. So I queried that, because I did my, like I said, I did my own research the night before, and they actually used the exact same time period as I did. So they used a 3-year period, which is exactly what I'd done. And when I was looking, it was a 3-year period of transfer revenue that nations and clubs have accumulated for players that have came through the B team, so made an appearance for the B team. And the numbers were staggering. The numbers probably made up about 50 to 75% of Craig Mulholland's numbers in his presentation. So my argument to him was essentially, well, league size will matter in terms of league reconstruction if you want to try and fit in B teams, which then gives more young players opportunities. But he answered it perfectly well. I've been in the job 7 weeks. That's not off the table. That is something ultimately we'll look at down the line, as well as grassroots and pathway. And the other one I queried was the GBE. So GBE, for anyone that doesn't know, is the process for a non-UK or non-UK player to come into Scotland, essentially for a visa or a work permit. And Craig Mulholland explained that,
because just quickly on that, we pretty much let everybody in.
So that's
right?
Exactly.
So you could argue that that's blocking the pathway for a young player.
So he basically, that's exactly it. So he said that in Scotland, we are actually really lax in terms of rules for the GBE compared to other nations. And you look at Elijah Just, who managed to come into Scotland through that, and it made Motherwell £7 million. Which is brilliant, but I then queried that and said, well, that's actually going against the pathway for young Scottish players when you take the thousands of other examples that weren't successful at Elijah, but explained that pretty
well.
So
you two would vote it through if you had a say?
Yes, 100%.
But you don't. Anyway, right, two other of the last 10 players from Africa to play for Rangers: Makanya, Fernandez, Gassama, Diamande, Giga, Dessers, Igeman, Sakala.
Calvin Bassey.
No.
No.
Since then.
Oh, wow, so I forgot Balogun.
Yep.
One more?
Yep. Oh, caught you out finally. It's not that you totally remember this guy. You've maybe just your timing's off.
I forgot Dessers, so.
That's true. He'd have played with Dessers, I'd imagine. He was a loan signing and he was good.
All right, Ahmed Diallo.
Nope.
Well, wait a minute.
He was good.
Stuart's inquiry.
Why?
Ahmed Diallo must
be. Too far back, no? Too far back. Honestly, he's more recent than that. He was a lone player, he was very good. I think it would have cost Rangers quite a bit. Some Rangers fans still say they would have taken him
Sima.
Back. Yeah, Abdallah Sima. Thank you very much to David and Andy. Thank you for your calls and your company. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Is that only the last two?